Hello, and welcome to episode 20 of Crosshairs Radio. On today's show, we have a return guest. Ben Frederick of Beyond CX is back in the basement, and we are getting a follow-up on everything we talked about in episode 9 of the podcast. If you haven't listened to that, maybe go back, give it a listen. It's a long one, I warn you, but it's interesting. We kept this one to just 90 minutes, so a little bit shorter, but still a great conversation with Ben. Always happy to have him drop by. He had a great end to the season, and we talk about all of what he's gone through throughout the season and what he is looking forward to for next season. No sponsor for this show as well. What you can do for me is just tell a friend. You race cross with somebody, they haven't heard the podcast yet, let them know. Tweet it out there, put it on Facebook, do all that stuff. Huge help for me, and that's about it. Let's go talk to Ben. All right, we are back in the basement with Ben Frederick for round two. Ben was on episode 9 of Crosshairs Radio, and if you haven't listened to that, you may want to go back if you have a couple hours, go through that episode first or not, and then come back here, because I think a lot of the stuff that we are going to talk about today, sort of the end of the season recap with Ben, will make more sense if you listen to episode 9 of the podcast first. But with that being said, Ben, how you doing?
I'm doing great. To all the guys on the trainer,
Keep
slaying it.
Yeah. So just even to start, you know, you came in episode 9, the podcast was starting to roll, but still sort of building steam. Just since then, give me a little, just for my own benefit, a little feedback on what the impact of doing that first podcast was.
Oh, it was incredible. I just have to first to say thanks for the opportunity. There is a point of change that I can look at, and it was when the podcast came out. And from that moment, things accelerated pretty rapidly with my career. So thank you for the opportunity. And then thank you everyone who has pulled me aside at the race or said anything on Twitter or Instagram about the podcast. It's been really, really humbling and incredible. And I don't take it for granted for a second.
Yeah, that's awesome, and that's exciting for me, because that's the type of thing that I love. Other than giving people good content to stick in their ears when they're on their way to work or on the trainer or whatever else it is, seeing that you guys are able to benefit from it is pretty awesome for me. That makes it worth it. But today we are. When was it? When that episode 9 came out, where were we?
I had just gotten on my first UCI podium, and was not going to Cincy and Louisville.
Right. So it was post DCCX.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where we were. And so that was kind of like, I guess it's kind of the midpoint of the season at that point.
So from that time, I know that, you know, right after that did you get injured, or you were sick? You got sick.
Yeah.
So you took a little time out. Let's just to get the conversation rolling, let's just start from there. Let's just pick it up chronologically from the last time we talked.
Cool. Yeah. So at from the moment of the podcast airing, I was 14th in the Pro CX, and I had just cracked the top 150 in the world, which was, you know, incredible. And then I guess from there, that was like a nice little mid-Atlantic swing of races. And then I took maybe like 3 weeks from UCI racing. I was able to do the Rockburn Cross and defend my win there.
Yeah, that was a nice little surprise that you showed up. I mean, you're out there racing these UCI races, and you come back and join us at our local race. That was cool to see.
And then, I didn't make notes for this one.
That's okay.
So there was, I think, Supercross Cup was the next race at the UCI level, and the first day I really struggled. Like, that is a great course. They had they call it a very mountain bike course. There's always mud there. It's always like, you know, you got to be able to pedal a bike pretty hard. And this year, especially with the pro only section that they had, it was different in the best way. But the first day I had some bad luck. I flatted out, and wasn't able to finish on day one. And then on day two, it was still mud, and I had one bike with tires that worked for those conditions, and then my pit bike had file treads on it. And
oh,
so it was
okay.
One of those things, yeah, where like literally everything has to go right. Because if I pit, my race is over.
Right.
And that was a time when I was like just running low on tires and an order didn't come through. And so, you know, thanks to the podcast, I was able to reach out and people were like, hey, let's figure this out. Like, let's get you some stuff. And
yeah,
so that was awesome. I was able to meet some people in New York. Thanks, Tim, to get some tires so that I wouldn't, you know, I'd be able to get set up after the weekend. And then on day two, I was able to ride for fifth, which was really cool to have the confidence from DCCX to be like, you know, I can actually race for the podium now.
Right.
And then to feel like on a mediocre day physically that I can be, you know, in the top five at a UCI race.
Yeah.
And so like there's a pattern of the season where, you know, last podcast I was talking about how it's so weird that I can be in the conversation for a top 10, because only at the beginning of the year I was barely cracking the top 10 to being like, oh, I can ride in the top 10. I should ride in the top 10. And to now be like, oh man, like I should be riding in the top five. And that's like where it's possible for me to do.
Yeah, that's incredible. And you're still coming up at a little bit of a disadvantage because you're still privateer.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of stuff when you're, mm-hmm, worrying about bikes and tires and all that, that probably takes a lot of that mental energy away from,
yeah,
actually being able to race. Then.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can't thank the people who have supported me enough for being able to, like, you know, obviously I want to try to put off the best possible, I guess, not illusion, but I want to be as professional as the team can allow.
Right.
But there's, you know, I'm a bike rider. You know, I've been riding my bike for the past 4 years, not managing a business,
right,
or
right,
running a team. And so there's times when I kind of get into a little bit of a pickle, and then people have been phenomenal in fixing, like helping me fix that. So I can't say enough thanks to people for doing that, but it's definitely challenging when, you know, you have to tell your mechanic like, yeah, I can probably pay you.
Right.
But it's going to be on a sliding scale depending on how well I do this weekend.
Yeah.
Cause I got to make sure that we can have a hotel and then I can feed you and then I can get you home, but I will pay you eventually. Like,
right.
Please.
Yeah. And not to jump around, but you know, I think this is probably something that a lot of other racers at your ability in your same situation face is the question. I know you have done an amazing job building this program, getting sponsors and getting to where you are now. Would you, if somebody came to you with a team spot, would you consider that? Where you wouldn't have to worry about all of this managing your own business?
I mean, obviously I'd think about it pretty hard. But I mean, I've invested a lot of myself into this team.
Yeah.
And I've really worked to develop the brand of the team. And I really feel passionate about what I can do from a telling a story and getting people excited about cyclocross.
Right.
And I know that I can only grow that and do more. And that's something I'm really fired up about. Like to have this cool story and be able to hopefully impact people in some small way using what I've built. As of right now, I'm definitely moving forward with the team for the second season. Because I really think that I think it's awesome.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. But I,
I have to imagine just, you know, that is one of the disadvantages you're at when you're going against, especially in C1s, people in that top 10 really aren't worrying about a lot of the things that you're worrying about.
Yeah. And so what I'm doing and putting a lot of my effort into, like specifically right now, is to go ahead and try to set up as much of their program for myself as I can. So right now when I'm not training a lot, like really digging in and setting, like doing as much of the logistics that I can right now to make it easier. And so instead of just like playing catch up all season, like I felt like I was doing this season, I want to like front load all of that work.
Right.
So that I know I, you know, I have the budget for doing my, you know, race entries instead of like, okay, well I got my prize money and now I can pay for the entries for the next race.
Right.
And now that I've learned about, you know, like something that I've never had to do is like book hotels, like doing things like that. And so having that experience and kind of using that hopefully will make it a little bit less stressful. I mean, it's not going to be stress free. And obviously, you know, I'll have to deal with the logistics of that, but it also gives you a lot of ownership too. You know, each result is directly a product of, you know, not only the work that I put out on the bike, but the work that I put in off the bike and working with the people that I work with to do that.
Right. Yeah. So before I got you off on that tangent, we were
Supercross. Yeah. And so, yeah, I was able to, you know, get in the top five, and that's awesome. And especially because I had been making a concerted effort to, I guess since DCCX, I've been making a very concerted effort into being able to turn my bike better. The results that I got up to that point were because I could pedal a bike really hard.
Right.
And I know, like HPCX, the weekend before DCCX, I really got my stuff handed to me, because I wasn't turning my bike well. And I mean, I could, you know, do 1,000 watts up the climb, but like, it doesn't do you any good on the descent if you get dropped. And so at Supercross, you know, there was mud and some more technical challenging stuff. And I felt like I was able to hold my own. And so that was kind of the start of like, okay, seeing that kind of work paying off, was pretty cool. And so after that was, I think NBX was the next UCI race. And I was a little bit hesitant to drive 9 hours for a single weekend race. But you know, I had the goal of top 10 in Pro CX, and I can't, you know, I had already missed out on the C1s at Cincy and Louisville. And so, you know, it's the team owner hat that I have to wear wants to see my riders racing at UCI races.
Right.
So that's the fun dichotomy that I have to play. It's like, well, you know, 9 hours in a car is a lot on my legs, and I don't know if it'd be set up for my best result, but the owner's like, but you got to race. Like, you got to make it happen. So I went up there, and it was a course that didn't suit me super well last year. I don't think I made the top 10 last year. But again, it was a really cool situation where I have been practicing turning my bike, and I was able to turn my bike really well. And I got fourth, and had a really good battle with Jack Kisseberth. Like, it was a really, really good race.
Right.
My start wasn't great, so I was playing catch up the whole time, and I felt like I could have at least been in the conversation with those top three guys. And you know, there was issues with, like, I had never dropped a chain on my CX1 before, but like, four guys did on theirs, including myself. And so it's like, oh, I almost made contact with them, and then my chain dropped. And then, you know, you're battling back.
So just to back up just for a second, because I know a lot of people who are listening also race and probably struggle with that same technical aspect that you have been. So when you say concentrating on working on, you know, improving turning, what does that entail? What did you do from HPCX NBX to improve?
So I got on my mountain bike a few times, to like if you episode nine, if you go back to episode nine, I do have a background on the mountain bike.
Right.
And so getting back on that was important. I also called up a guy that I know does like enduro racing on a mountain bike. And I was like, hey, let's go play in the woods. Let me follow you around.
Yeah.
And so, you know, following someone around who's really good at turning a bike fast only is going to push me. And even just having him ride behind me, it's like, well, I don't want to hold him up.
Right.
And
right.
So you're pushing yourself more than you would on your own. So that was a big thing that helped a lot. Another thing that I changed, is if I was on a training ride and I wasn't doing a specific interval, I'd like, if I saw something that looked fun to ride on, I'd just do it.
Right.
I wouldn't be worried about the missing kilojoules or watts by coasting and doing this like technical thing. I would just do it. And I also, another, like I would set up, and we have a local park and I have these features that I would just go and session. And like on recovery day, yeah, it doesn't necessarily, like on recovery day, you want to be pedaling less than so many watts for only this amount of time. But, you know, kind of getting over that, like that idea of the numbers being so important and going, well, yeah, numbers are important, but you know, it's free speed. And if it keeps me on the bike a little bit longer during the day, like it's, you have to make those little investments time-wise because it does pay off. And when it comes down to it, you can pedal a bike really fast, but you know, you can also lose a second and a half in the turn.
Right.
It's just free speed. Like everyone talks about it. Powers talks about it.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
He, you know, when, I can't remember which race it was, but when he got like seventh, it was, I'm gonna blank on it, but like Sven flatted and was way back. And then was just, Powers was just talking about how like Sven came through. He's like, oh cool, I'm just going to ride Sven's wheel for a little bit. But then Sven does as Sven does and just like pulls 5 seconds on him through a technical section that's not really pedally.
Right.
So like you can always improve.
Right.
You can always.
Yeah, that was stuff. The like when Meyerson was on the show, he was talking mm-hmm. about that, you know, and being a kind of critical of, you know, Lars Vanderhaar and other
yeah.
guys like that
yeah.
who are giving up free speed at,
exactly,
you know, and he has points to back that up mm-hmm. and yeah, it's like at a certain point that's what's important. Like everybody can produce the power,
right?
And that's what's gonna
right.
separate
and,
you.
And so it was a situation where I was just tired of closing gaps. And I was tired of being on the back of groups that I was stronger than, but just because I, you know, couldn't figure out how to get around the corners fast or having the confidence to let myself do that.
Right.
It's kind of fun. It was finding that balance of, like last year, just like being too loose and trying too hard and like pushing it too much and then crashing and then not getting a result.
Right.
And then at the beginning of the year, it was like being too far on the other side. Like, well, I need to at least like finishing the race is important. So I'm not going to like freak out and potentially crash and take myself out because that's wasted energy and resources and time. So finding that balance of, you know, putting yourself in the, taking a little bit more risks or having the confidence to take more risks. And the only way you do that is by building that confidence at home. Because if you can do a turn in the same, like hit the same turn 17 different times in a row, if you hit a similar turn in a race, you're not even thinking about it. But if you haven't hit a turn like that ever, because you've been too busy doing your, you know, 5x5s, it's not, you know, that's, hey, there's a couple seconds that you just lost.
Absolutely. So, all right. Yeah. So we're back at MBX.
Mm-hmm. Day one, great day, fourth. I really felt like things were coming around, especially after taking, you know, some time off racing, like, Supercross, you know, that was after 3 weeks of not UCI racing. So then I was getting kind of back in the swing of things. UCI racing's fast. The starts are intense. So like getting back into the swing, like I said, and then, on day one and the last lap, trying to stay with Jack, I came off the sand run and my pedal went straight into my hamstring. And like after the race, it hurt pretty bad. And going back to, you know, if you listen to the last episode, like I'm really good at pushing too hard and taking that risk and then getting hurt and having to take 2 months off. And so it was a very hard decision, and you know, I probably could have raced and it probably would have worked out fine, but I decided to not race day two because nationals is important. And, a good showing there, well, it would make no sense for me to risk it and then have to take 2 months off. And then like, It would be a disservice to myself for how much work I've put in, to my coach, how much work he's put in with me, to my sponsors who have invested in me, to all you guys who have been following. Like, there'd be no point in me fading into obscurity again. And so it was weird. I got to go watch a cross race.
Yeah.
And it was important for me to go, because if I was just sitting at home, I would have been losing my mind. But it was great because I was able to go watch Anthony Clark win his first UCI race.
Awesome.
And that was incredible because yeah.
What was it? What's going through your head when you're watching that from the sidelines? Knowing, I mean, the 24 hours before that, you were right in the thick of it with those guys. And now you're almost like standing outside of yourself. Did you learn anything from that, or was it just a fun day just watching a race?
It was weird, 'cause I have the context of racing those races, and I know how hard it is, and I know how much it means to people to get in the top 10. And so, you know, I was just really pulling for every single person in that race. Like every group, I was like, come on, like just knowing what was at stake and what was going through their heads. And so, you know, even, you know, all the way down to the top 15, it was like every single person that came through, I would give people the information that I would want.
Right. Oh, nice. Cool.
And so, you know, like when Anthony was making his, like I think he flatted or dropped his chain and was off the back. I was like, you know, stay calm. You're going to get there. You're going to get there. But he knew that, like that day, he knew that he was going to win. I could see it from lap two. He knew he was going to win that day. But to be like, to try to give him the things that I would tell myself in those situations.
Yeah.
It was really cool. And yeah, it sucked that I couldn't race. And it was really easier for me to go down the rabbit hole of like, oh man, I think I could have been there in the top. Like, I think I could have been battling for the win.
Right.
But it was also really, it was really nice to kind of be on the outside again. And I wasn't like, you know, drinking beer, freaking out. Like I don't know. I'm too close to the guys to like do them the disservice of just being crazy and not really being like, I felt so invested in the guys in the race, like you just pulling for them so hard.
Yeah.
And so like, yeah, that was hard, but it was the right decision. And I was able to talk to the right people, and I only had to take like 2 days off. I did the smart thing of, you know, I'd wake up and ride for 15 minutes and then go back to the house and not do anything. And then at lunch I'd do another 15 minutes.
So basically keeping it loose, but not
exactly
overstressing.
And then always checking in on it.
Right.
As opposed to just going like, well, I'm just not going to, I don't want to test it, or trying to train too hard.
Right.
Like trying to do the, you know, the Goldilocks approach. and so can't remember exactly what was after that, but like it fixed itself in a way that hasn't happened before. Like I haven't gotten to the point of like, oh, I got hurt and then I took time off really fast and then I was back in faster. Like that hadn't happened before. So it was kind of cool. Like,
yeah.
Hey, it worked.
Yeah.
And then shoot, was that North Carolina after that? I think it was North Carolina after that. And that was the first time I cracked the top five last year. So
when is like Jingle Cross and all of that happening within that? Is that already?
That was Supercross Cup, I think.
Okay, that's right. All right.
No. NBX was also Jingle Cross.
Okay.
I think. I'm sorry if I'm wrong.
trying to think, or was Ruts and Guts Jingle Cross?
There was three UCI races in one weekend.
All right.
So yeah. there was one in either Ohio or Texas, and then there was one in, it was Jingle Cross.
Yeah.
And then whatever New England one.
That's right.
I did.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'm pretty sure it was NBX.
Right.
Obviously, you know, 3 days of racing plus a C1 is important, like that would make sense, but it was a 14-hour drive. I can't afford a flight.
Right.
I didn't have the support structure there. It would have been ideal, but, you know, it's just one of those things. Don't have the money. So, you know, you move on and do what you can with what you have. And then I went down to North Carolina. I got eighth both days, which on paper is not what I wanted. And again, there was some issues on day one where I felt like, I crashed twice.
Yeah, just to, you know, because it's going to drive me crazy. So I had to look. Yeah, it was Jingle Cross, Ruts and Guts, and NBX were all
right
on the same day.
Yeah, yeah. Okay,
same
cool.
Weekend. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so North Carolina was next.
Yeah, and then I took myself out of the group for the win, and that was really frustrating for me. Because, you know, you want to give yourself the best shot at the win, and if you don't have the legs, that's fine. But if you like take yourself out of the opportunity, then you're thinking about like shoulda, coulda, woulda, what could have happened, and that's not fun. But like that was like that race used to be the race that you could kind of sneak into and get your UCI point for the year and be like, yes, next year I have the starting spots. But when Danny Summerhill comes down, Yannick Ekman, Anthony Clark, like,
yeah, so it was a full
it was a
full roster of heavy hitters.
That was
there.
One of the, like, you know, that was harder than probably like the Mid-Atlantic races, and like that was, it was tough. And then the next day I was able to race just at the end of that front group for the win, and I came unglued with like half a lap to go, but I felt way better about it because I was there, like I was there to not make it, as opposed to not being there to not make it.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it's all situational.
Exactly. And so, yeah, you know, eighth, 2 days in a row isn't ideal. But there was some really cool serendipitous stuff that kind of happened leading into that, where I was able to meet a guy named Matt Urchell, who's connected with the Northampton scene, and he was going down to Athens for a training camp, and invited me along, and it was such, you know, such a cool opportunity just to, you know, train with people instead of training by myself. And
right, no, that's huge.
Like the New England guys definitely in the past have had to make that trip because weather. I didn't necessarily have to make that trip because of weather, but because of Matt and you know, his willingness to bring on this like unknown, I was able to go and hang out with some of the Jam guys, hang out with Adam Meyerson a little bit, get to know him a little bit better, and just kind of feel like in.
Yeah, well, that must have been eye-opening too, just to see. I mean, you've obviously know what you're doing as far as training and and riding and all of that, but just seeing that approach must have been cool.
It was really eye-opening. And like, you know, it's still not lost on me that I had the opportunity to spend a week riding bikes.
Yeah.
Like that's it.
Yeah. Like absolutely.
I'm still not very far from the, I got to check work and like, I can't, spending a week in a place just to ride bikes when I could just stay at home and ride bikes. So that was a really, really cool opportunity. And you know, I was able to do some bigger riding, and Athens is such a cool place. Like, as far just to be able to drop in somewhere and be able to have like a cool, you know, town scene, but also, you know, you can easily look at Strava heat maps and then, you know, get a three-hour ride in without pulling your phone out every, you know, 20 minutes or anything like that. It was really awesome. So thank you, Matt. Thank you for that opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I talked to Matt some as well. He's the Pactimo rep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, that and Kind Human as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that sounded like it was great, and that must have been a good prep going into Nationals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And like, you know, that, you know, North Carolina happened, and then it was like, there was the Texas races that still happened. But for like the New England guys, for us East Coasters, guys who couldn't make that trip, like that was, you know, we had two weekends off, and then Kingsport and the Nationals. So it was like, okay, it's time to like Nationals. Nationals is on the brain. Everything we do from now on is a step towards Nationals.
Right.
And so that was a really good opportunity just to like dial in that focus.
Yeah.
And have people around who had that same, like, it's just, you know, a community of excellence is so important. And so to be around that was, you know, it was like, okay, here we go. It's game time. So then I came back to the DC area, leading into Kingsport, you know, there was a lot of like, you know, things that happened towards the end of the season. Like I finished my last hard workout of my last hard block. And then you're just counting down like your lasts for the season. And so like, you know, you finish that last hard workout where you're like, oh my gosh, like good thing that's over because I don't have to feel this cracked again.
Right.
And now I'm only resting and like,
Well, going back to those North Carolina races, just in the big picture, hearing what you're saying now, which I think is sort of cool, is how disappointed you were with the top 10.
Oh, I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Because like, it's not lost on me that if I would have gotten 10th or in the top 10 2 days in a row, like, oh my God, winning so hard. Like,
right.
Yeah.
It's, but that's good. I mean, that's the progression you want.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Where, you know,
and to have that happen, to have that growth happen in a year, in less than a season is when I take a step back and get out of all the emotion and all the stress. It's like, yeah, that's really cool. Like that's really cool. So yeah, thanks for, you know, bringing that up because it is something to.
Yeah, big picture yeah, wise, it's, big va- picture. It's validation.
Exactly.
You know, even though you're disappointed that you are disappointed, means something.
Exactly.
Because even on a day that you're kicking yourself for not doing as well as you think you should do, you're in the top 10.
Yeah.
You're eighth place.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, the day two, I was in the lead group for the win. Like,
right.
You know, it was only in the last 2 minutes going up that last climb where I popped. And so, yeah, that's pretty cool. And
yeah,
especially considering the guys who were in front of me at that point, it's like, okay, all
right. Right.
So
you're back finishing off your last hard block.
And yeah. And it was, there's a lot of, like, I've been truly living out of my car since like the week before Kingsport. The family that helped support me by letting me stay in their basement had some, like, it was time for me to move on because there's some family stuff and I wasn't going to be like, but Nationals are really important,
right?
But you're, you know, I should stay here over your family stuff that's way more important than me. So I had to figure out moving out of there because my move out day would have been the Wednesday before Nationals, and I really wanted to make a point to like go to Kingsport, Tennessee for that UCI race and then sure, stay in Asheville. And so that meant the week before I had to move out and figure out where my stuff was going, figuring out where I'm going, cause that's still up in the air and, you know, just more logistics. Cause I don't deal enough with logistics. And so the timing was good because the week before Kingsport started the taper, and that's always really hard. Like I wrote a blog about how hard it is to have your job. The thing that's going to make you the fastest is to do less.
Right. Where's that blog?
It's at www.beyondcx.rocks. Thank you. Click on the blog tab. And just kind of talking about the, you know, as athletes, we just want to work harder. And if we feel like if we're not working, riding hard, feeling tired, you know, having that response, that we're not improving. And so dealing with like the taper and riding less and only having to do one really hard workout a week, like that was a challenge. So it was nice to be distracted with having to move.
Because it's like the nervousness of thinking that you're losing fitness or exactly. whatever else, right?
Yeah, and like knowing that, like for me it was like there's nothing more I can do. And then you think about like, oh, was I really too tired to do that last interval? Or right. should I have just pushed a little bit harder? Like the work's been done. Like there's a finality about like, essentially this is it. This is what's going to happen. But going back to that free speed stuff and the technical stuff in years past, and like in the Ben Frederick of before this season, I would have been like, well, this is it. But the new wanting to be the best cyclocross rider, Ben Frederick, that I'm really trying to step into is like, no, man, I have 14 days. I can get better free speed. Like there are ways that I can still improve that aren't riding a bike and pushing watts. And so that's, you know, that was a big like shift mentally to go, yeah. Okay. So yeah, I can only ride an hour and a half today. And that doesn't feel like I'm going to get home and not be tired at all, which is weird. But I can also spend, you know, a good 45 minutes ripping this off camber turn because I know that that's going to be on the nationals court. Like I'm going to simulate the things that I know I can do, and having the confidence like, yeah, if I do, you know, on my ride, I can't push watts, but you know, I'll do a 15 second run every 10 minutes just because like that's something that's going to benefit me.
Sure.
So trying to find those like, you know, ways to never stop improving if possible. So yeah, going into Kingsport when you have 2 weeks from racing and like, you know, it's always the question mark. You hear athletes talk about it. It's like the question mark, where am I going to be? So going into Kingsport with the people that were going to be there, like Powers and Driscoll and Anthony Clark and, Duren was going to be there. Kerry Warner was there. It was, you know, it's kind of scary going into that because that's a good portion of the top 10, that you would put on paper as being in the top 10 for nationals. And when you have that goal, it's like, okay, well, let's see what happens. So going into that weekend was, you know, it was exciting because I was able to, I got fifth, and that was cool. Due to, you know, starting can go your way and it's phenomenal, or it cannot go your way and it really sucks. And I didn't have the best start. And so like right when I had made my way back to the front group is when Powers decided he wanted to go faster.
So no chance to catch your breath.
No, or like he went faster and I was still behind three people who weren't quite ready to go faster.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when he and Warner and Duren got off the front. And so then I was kind of in no man's land with Travis Livermont, who was just coming back from his Europe trip. And so like we were pedaling pretty well together. And there was a couple moments of hesitation where I should have just like, if it were to happen, like just pull him up to that group. Like we got within a few seconds, mm-hmm. like this Powers had already attacked and was, you know, 30 seconds ahead. And then Warner and Duren were kind of looking at each other. And I was like, this is the perfect time. If we're going to bridge, like it needs to happen now. But I hesitated because I didn't want to bring Travis. And then I saw that his teammate Tristan Cowie was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, I'm in a situation with two guys on the same team and me. And not wanting to pull two guys up and get them to the group. And because like, I mean, it's just tactics. It's
right.
like roadie stuff that I'm
right,
familiar
right.
with.
Absolutely.
And so that kind of took away the podium, but I felt like without those moments of hesitation that I could have been there, which is cool.
Yeah. No, absolutely. No, that's another thing, you know, different from what you were feeling in North Carolina, where it was more the strategic and the mental game as far as just making a mistake or not you know, doing what you thought needed to be done.
I mean, right.
You say you hesitated, but at the same time, there was a tactical reason for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's hard to know that something, or it's hard to like not give yourself the opportunity to see what's possible with your legs because of that. But, you know, it's nice to know that with the people there, I was solidly in the top 10. And so it gave me some pretty good confidence going into nationals. And like there were elements, like some off camber turns that were like, okay, cool, awesome. I did not lose time where I would normally lose time, and it shows in the lap times.
Right. Yeah, that Kingsport race is really a great opportunity. I think that's a nice one on the schedule where it is. People are scared to have these late season races, but that week before
it's so crucial.
Nationals. And also, what was it, like a 3-hour drive or something like that from, or?
It was, for me, I stayed in Harrisonburg for like the 2 days before that race. So it was only a 4-hour drive.
Right, but then from there to Asheville.
Oh, it was an hour.
An hour, right.
That's it.
Perfect.
Perfect. Yeah. You know, you can, yeah, it was perfect. And so it just made, it was a great place on the calendar. And before Austin, I hadn't raced since North Carolina. And so, you know, I could have had the worst race ever at Kingsport, but just the process of going through a race makes you better to race the next weekend, because you remember, oh yeah, I need to eat this at this time. And oh yeah, it always takes longer for me to do the things than I think it's gonna. And so just going through the motions, like that was worth the investment of going, but it ended up being a really good race. So like, obviously it was definitely worth the trip and the effort and the money to do that. And like, if you haven't had the opportunity to do that race, I would highly recommend it, because it's a good lesson in, making a good use of a small space and still being able to have a quality course and a quality race.
Yeah.
And the setting's pretty cool. The start finish line is under two like overpass bridges. And so it has like kind of an industrial feel, but,
sure.
It was a cool race. So good job, guys. If you're listening, and then, man, then it was nationals week.
Right.
Ugh.
And no going home.
No going home, because
since you didn't have a home anymore.
Exactly. So I would have gone to a not home for 2 days and then turned around and driven another 7 hours back.
Right.
And so, you know, having spent a lot of time in the car, it obviously has an adverse effect. And so I was essentially losing two training days or two recovery days. And so it was, that week was just another lesson in, you know, if you put yourself out there, like just being so grateful for people being willing to help someone like me out. So there was a day of transition where I had a place lined up from Monday to Thursday, like very seat of pants stuff, but like I had a place lined up Monday to Thursday, and there was like a night, Sunday night that I didn't have a place to stay, and like not wanting to spend money that I didn't necessarily have on a hotel. And, like the jam guys let me crash on their floor, and I was like, oh, awesome, cool. Like that's one less thing that I have to worry about. And then, David Tucker, from the Bicycle Outfitters, racing team, was gracious enough to let me stay in his house that he rented with his wife, and like barge in on their vacation, to let me stay there. So thank you, Dave. That was incredible. And he even volunteered to pit for me for the non-championship race, which we can talk about. And then,
is that a shop that you had worked at previously?
Yeah. And so like, that's where the connection was made. And Dave really helped me with, like at the beginning of the season, he donated a Garmin watch to be auctioned off. And so like it was very full circle.
Right.
Like he was there from the very beginning, and then he was able to help me at the end. So that was neat. And then, if we're going to stay chronologically, So Tuesday or the Sunday after Kingsport, I did not do the second day because, you know, you're only going to race once at Nationals. So much like the Power school of thought with like, I just do the C1s. You're going to race the one day all out if you don't have to worry about the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something my coach and I talked about, and we did that. And so I was able to have it like, you know, chill ride on Sunday and then another relaxed ride on Monday. And then Tuesday was a non-championship race.
Yeah.
Which is, I think it's a cool idea.
So, and the age, so this was
23 to 29.
23 to 29.
And it's the day before any championship races.
Right.
But based on the workouts that we would have, like that everyone had been trying to simulate, because of the, like the video that was released, like why not go ahead and one, do a workout because you'd have to do that around that time anyway. Instead of like trying to simulate the course,
right? Actually
do it on the course,
do it on the course and at speed
at exactly. And there's something about like, I'm remembering from Austin, like, or any other race that you do the course in your pre-ride, you get two laps, you might do one hot lap. But what really makes the difference is like, how are you going to feel 40 minutes in? Like, how is that run up going to feel 40 minutes in as opposed to, you know, when you're fresh in between laps and you're not pedaling super hard because there's, you know, people in front of you.
Right. And that is really the hardest thing I would think in preparing, especially for a course as technical as Asheville
mm-hmm.
was,
mm-hmm.
is that we want everybody to have their championship race, you know, from 9-year-olds
yep.
up. But what that means is there's really no time to get on the course. And when you are on the course, you know, you're going to get caught behind these groups that are seeing these technical sections that you want to ride at speed,
yep.
yet they're all staring at, wondering how they're going to get down them.
Yep.
So you're sort of
exactly
having to,
and you know, that's logistics that's, you know, what happens. And so I really made it a point to try to avoid those kind of pitfalls that wouldn't benefit me. And so what would benefit me is like ripping in after doing the climb up to the steep downhill technical mountain bike section and having done, you know, three laps before that of doing that. And so that's being tired, like riding stuff tired. And so like, thanks to Tom Bendian of Saw Armor, he helped me with the race entry to do that. And like that was so crucial because especially with that course, you could, like, if you pedaled the whole course all out after two laps, you're going to blow up.
Mm.
And if you blow up on that course, you go backwards so fast.
Right. Just because of the elevation, like the running part.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's times when you need to put out power and there's times when you don't. And so it was a great opportunity to like go really hard for two laps to simulate the start and then go, okay, now I know what not to do. And so essentially it was like, okay, you get your own private pre-ride, to see the course and get the flow of the course.
At the same time, you also need to respect at least the people you're competing against,
mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
that this is a race.
It is a race, right?
And that everybody is taking it seriously. Some people aren't racing again, so this this is it for them,
right? Or they're just, I think because it was a non, I can't imagine that people would come for the non-championship race only.
Yeah,
I could be wrong, so I, you know, sorry if I'm wrong, but
there might be some people in there that
but I think that's a great opportunity for people to like see the course.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And that's what I used it for. And I was, yeah. So that allowed me to get a really good idea of the flow of the course. I got to do the run up. It was rideable that day, but you know, if it had to be a situation of running in the national championships, like you need to know what that's like. And mm-hmm. so instead of like going on the Blue Ridge Parkway and, you know, trying to figure out a workout that would simulate that, I could just do it on the course.
So you say it's rideable, and then even in the elite race, it was questionably rideable. I mean, some guys were definitely doing it, but what's the cost-benefit analysis of that? Did you ride it at all?
In my pre-ride laps for the non-champ race, I rode it.
Yeah. And it's about, so you're looking at like 15 seconds from bottom to top?
Bottom to top, yeah.
Yeah.
I attempted in my pre-ride laps on Sunday. And I made it most of the way, but I was never in a position the first couple laps because of traffic to give it my best shot. And then after that, I felt like I was going to be too tired.
Well, so does it take more out of you trying to ride that or running it?
From the specific effort of the climb only, it's pretty much the same.
Okay. And what about time saved?
Definitely time saved if you're riding it.
Mm-hmm.
You can run it faster than you can pedal up it, but you're in your pedals at the top.
Right, and then you're going straight down to those.
Yeah. So in the race, there was a lap when I ran it and a guy rode it and I'm getting on my bike and about to turn down the switchbacks and he comes right in on the inside because he's already in his pedals and accelerating.
Right, and that's a point that can't be stressed enough when people question riding versus running and they're always like, well, it's the same. It's not the actual riding versus running part. It's the getting back on your bike and getting back up to speed.
Look at the next 10 seconds.
Right.
Like that's where the time is going to be saved or not saved. But doing the Tuesday thing allowed me to like not have to go to the course until Saturday.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't ride the course from Tuesday to Saturday.
Right. But let's not skip over the end of that, non-championship race. So you end up winning that race.
Oh, I did. Yeah. And that was incredible. Because it was the first, you know, first race of the week for like any racing. And so that was awesome. Like it was cool.
Even in your head, I mean, granted, non-championship race, but you're at nationals, you're standing on a podium. So you have to say, okay, and this is, you know, at a lesser degree, this is what this feels like.
There, like that podium scenario was funny because I was so laser focused on Sunday. So like I just didn't have in my head that like, you know, that there were even be awards. Like obviously it was in the tech guide and obviously I just didn't read it.
Yeah.
But I got a message from a friend who
did they have to track you down for the podium?
Well, you know, so we race at 10 in the morning and it's like 27 degrees and freaking cold. And so like I just was like, get home, get warm, take a nap. I'm not used to racing at 10. So waking up at 6:30 to eat, like that's just not in my normal. So it was like, okay, yes, I need to do this because it's necessary, but it's not the ideal. So let's recover from that effort from waking up early, get home, take a nap, get warm. And then I had a friend who, she also got on the podium of her race and was just like, yeah, like I can't wait to see you at the podium. And I was like, oh, cool. Oh, there's a podium. She's like, yeah, in 45 minutes. And I was like, oh, cool. Because I'm 30 minutes away and in my pajamas. So I'll see you soon. Like, and then there was a traffic accident that I got caught behind. And, it was the loose nuts guys. They also ride Richie's.
Yeah.
And so they're out of Georgia and they were great about like, you know, just leave the car running. Like we'll park your car. Like just, you know,
amazing.
Don't miss the podium. Cause you know, that would be awful to miss the podium because it's so crucial for sponsors to see it. It's, you know, I got to stand on a podium at the national championships, right? So they were great in making sure that I could get there. And so, yeah, I got there's a picture of me on the podium at the national championship. So that's really cool. Yeah. So that was a cool experience.
Right. So then how does the rest of the week go leading up to the race?
It was tough because you don't want to get too riled up about overthinking every single possible scenario for the race when there's literally nothing you can do about it sitting at home, right? Because the weather's going to do what it's going to do. Other people are going to do what they're going to do. And so it was trying to find the balance of, do I stay and be a cycling monk and just stew in all the possibilities? Or do I try to like disassociate a bit and make efforts to, you know, distract myself and that not be a bad thing. And so like I did things like the Loose Nuts guys and Matt invited me over for dinner. And so that was cool to like not be, you know, yeah, I can go hang out with friends and it's not going to be a detriment to my race. Or like go walk around Asheville and see the town that, you know, I was staying in.
Sure.
And know that, you know, an hour and a half of walking around, that's not going to,
right,
on Wednesday is not going to affect, right, my race on Sunday. Right. But it's so easy to go down that, yeah, path, though.
And that's important, too. Yeah. You know, you got to have that experience when,
exactly,
when you're going to these places.
Especially since I was there for the week.
Right.
If I was coming in on Friday, I wouldn't have time. But I was there for the week. So it's like, yeah, I need to like, you know, do that kind of stuff. Dave had me at his place until Thursday,
mm-hmm,
and that was awesome. And then I had to move to the Shimano house, and I was able to hang out with the mechanics there. And so that was, you know, big thanks to those guys for letting me crash there.
Yeah. Great.
And they were right at the border of the Pisgah National Forest. And so on Friday, I was able to do a really incredible ride in the Bent Creek Park area. And so it was a nice, like, just go ride your bike. I found some trails, found some dirt roads, and I, you know, just to go, yeah, yeah, Nationals is Sunday, but I don't need to think about that.
Right.
I just need to like get rad and play on my bike. And so that was really, really important as the last kind of like hurrah. And then it was like, okay, tomorrow's Saturday. Tomorrow's the day before Nationals. Let's do this. Like, now it's time to really step into that like hyper focused athlete mindset.
Yeah. And even, you know, you went back to, you know, being a cycling monk, how you could have fallen into that and worrying about everything going on. And it was tricky down there because if you're thinking about course conditions,
mm-hmm,
they were changing daily, if not hourly, and you didn't know what you were going to get come Sunday.
Even in the non-championship race that I did, it was frozen and hard for the first two laps, and then it slowly softened up and softened up. And so like every single time through, it was changing. So there's no point in like going for the open course times if, one, the course was physically very challenging. Like, you, right, could not soft pedal that course. Like, it was impossible.
Yeah, it's a workout. If, exactly, you're just going to be
even just
pre-riding it.
Just pre-riding. Yeah. So that
was a workout, and I just walked it.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, it would be a waste of energy to, well, one, that. It'd be a waste of energy to ride around the course. Two, for someone who doesn't have a team tent with all the bikes already at the course, like, it's an ordeal to get into the Biltmore and deal with parking and all that stuff. So, you know, it's just managing your resources.
Right. So what did you do for that? Who did you find a place to set up?
Yeah. So this is just, you know, I love the cyclocross community because without you guys, like, people like me couldn't be able to have the opportunities that I have. So, unfortunately Miles couldn't make it.
Yeah.
The pit boss, Top Gun, Maverick. He had a really cool opportunity, for getting an interview with a job, and like, okay, I get money is important, so you should, right, go ahead and do that. And then the guys in, there's a guy named John Gatch who helped me.
To John's podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He helped me, in 2014 at Cincy.
Mm-hmm.
And him and the Lionhearts guys.
Okay.
And like John Rademacher and his family helped me 2014. So I met those guys, and then they helped me again, at Nationals in Austin, because the whole, Treegate thing, I was using the, like the pro setup
thing. Right. That was donated to you.
Exactly.
To have that. Yeah. Right.
And then when they had to leave because their contractor was up on Monday.
Right.
You didn't have anything. The Lionhearts guys let me use their tent, and that was incredible. And so, when I found out Miles couldn't make it, John was the first person like that I thought about, because he's so dialed and he knows what he's doing, and he's a cool guy to boot. So Saturday morning, John Rademacher asked me to pit for his daughter in the 13-14 race.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, the cycling monk was like, it's the day before nationals. You want me to stand on my feet in the cold? But doing stuff like that is so important.
Sure.
Because it's just me. Like, really, when it comes down to it, it's like, it's just me standing with a bike. But for them, they get to watch their daughter race the national championships.
Right. And like, right. They don't, I mean, I couldn't imagine being a parent and being, I mean, stuck almost like in the pits where you, yeah. Well,
and like, it's just the culmination.
Giving a parent the opportunity to go out and just watch the race.
To be a parent, right. Because they've spent all year doing that, like being the parent, being the one, like being in the pits, cleaning the bikes, like, you know, if I can have the opportunity to have them, like, it's such a big investment for the parents. So it was really important for me to do that. And so she's part of the Lionhearts. And so I went to the Lionhearts. I was just around and, you know, asking, hey, John, so, you know, are you able to do it? I knew it was kind of up in the air. He's like, no, but this guy's name is Sam. Hey, Sam. Cool. Well, are your bikes here now? Yeah, well, get your bikes. Go get your bikes. Well, I can't pit for you, but me and Sam can, like, get them dialed for tomorrow. And then Sam will work with you tomorrow. And so the fact that not only was he able to say, no, I can't do it, I'm sorry, but we're going to do everything we can. I'm going to do everything I can to get you ready, and I'm going to find someone else for you. Like, that was incredible.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Like, way above and beyond.
Sure.
And so it was awesome because I dropped off my bikes with them and they cleaned them and got them dialed. And I was able to meet, my dad and stepmom who came in, which, you know, I've said it before, like I got into cycling after I left the nest. And so cycling has been very mine. And like, I haven't had that, you know, I wasn't doing the 13-14 race with my dad in the pit.
Right.
And so to be able to have nationals be this close and have them come down was awesome. And then my adopted family, the Smallwoods, all came down. There was 8 of them. 8 of them came down.
That's
and
awesome.
So I had, I you know, I was given the opportunity to have an hour to meet them for coffee and be like, hey, so glad you're here. Now I'm going to ignore you for 2 days because I got to be focused on the race. So that was really, really awesome that I was afforded that. And so then I went back to the course and did my openers, like climbing up the climb up to the Biltmore Mansion. Like, that was cool.
Right.
And then I was able to get on course for a lap, and that's when it started raining and everything changed. And so I only did a lap, which is like, ugh. And there were a lot of other people just doing lap after
lap. Was
that
Saturday afternoon?
Yeah.
Evening? Yeah. That was awful.
Yeah. The 3:40. Open time, like, it just got
just awful conditions wise.
Yeah, slippery. I mean, just, yeah. And without John and Sam, like, I would have been there until 6:30 cleaning my bikes in the cold rain. But, you know, I did my openers on the bike setup for training, and then I was able to just, like, drop that off and go do my pre-ride laps while they set up my training bike for racing. And then I showed up and they washed my bikes. And
wow.
That's just
great.
Awesome. Yeah. And then, like, Sam just really was dialed. And so not only did he, was he able to help me Saturday night, he texted me later. He's like, do you eat donuts? I said, one, if they're vegan, and two, at 5 o'clock tomorrow, I will. He's like, perfect. so that was cool. And then, like, the next morning, I woke up to a text going, like, hey, just so you know, I have someone else in the pits. Like, there's going to be, I found, like, there's going to be 2 of us in the pits.
Nice.
And so, like, to have that.
Because, again, we didn't know what the conditions were going to be like. And in the morning, I arrived, I think, 8 a.m. at the course on Sunday. And, you know, that first off camber around the barn,
unrideable.
It was almost the same as was like Saturday night. People just sliding down it.
It was almost unrunnable.
Yeah,
like there's videos of people not being.
No, there were people like using the posts to run with their bikes.
And so I think all the elite guys were expecting like just
half a lap change of bike, half a lap change of bike.
And so, you know, thank you, Sam, again for having the go-get-it-ness to help me be as set up as I could. And then not only that, he's like, oh, and I also have a tent for us.
Oh,
like,
nice.
Oh, that's so great. And so it was with the CX Women's Project.
Perfect. Those guys are awesome.
They're so great. And the timing worked out really well because like the U23 girl, like they were all finished.
Sure.
And so I got to have like two big tents by myself.
That was a really nice setup as well.
It was so nice. And it was cold that day. And so I wasn't warming up in the back, like outside the back of my car.
Right.
And
like, it's a nice little heated compound in there.
Yep. And that's the stuff that I hope to be able to set up for myself next year because it makes such a big difference. And so, yeah, then it was the national championships.
Yeah. So since we were talking so much about the pits, you know, and we'll get into the race, but just as an aside for that, did you end up changing bikes during the race?
I did because I crashed.
Okay. All right. Well, let's actually go to race day. Yeah. Then. Yeah.
So race day. Yeah. I had an 18th call up, which was like second on the third row, which was cool.
Yeah.
Especially considering like the races that I missed and, you know, it kind of lamenting not being able to go to those races because, you know, call-ups are so important. But still, all things considered, like, you know, big macro picture.
Right.
I got called up in the top 20.
So just the strategy of the call-up. They don't send you to a certain lane. You're basically called up.
Yep.
And so you're second. So you get to choose.
Yeah, I get to choose
where on the grid, 1 through 8 in that third row you want
to
go.
You look at the two guys in front of you and you're like, is this the good train? Like, are these going to be the guys that are going to go fast?
So who'd you set up behind?
You know what? I don't remember. I don't remember. Shoot.
Do you even look at the first row? Do you go, okay, there are Powers and Hyde. Let me slot in on that train.
My mental process for that was it's going to bunch up on the inside because it's a left-hand turn.
Sure, right.
And that's where it's going to, like, if you go around that turn and have to do a tight turn, it's going to be slick and bottleneck. And so I went on the right side of the grid.
Yeah, because if you look at when they first came up, Powers is 3 from the right. So same mentality. He didn't want to be squeezed all the way on the edge. So he's picking it, you know, he's got a couple lanes of safety in there, but definitely setting up for that left-hand turn.
Yeah. And so that was, you know, that's what I was kind of banking on.
Right.
So it's the national championships and it was super loud.
Which is kind of interesting because if you're on that, if you're on that third row and you're the last call up, so you know you're going to be tight to that left-hand barrier.
Leave that for someone else?
Yeah, it's almost a better spot to be the first one in the fourth row.
And you know, you don't have to you don't have to fill that lane.
Right.
Like, you can line up on the fourth row even if you have the third row spot.
Right.
So yeah, that's a game that I have played before.
Yeah.
Play by play, the start happens. Danny Summerhill doesn't get the best clip in. And so the two rows in front of me and to the right go around him and that pushes me towards the middle and I get two seats in my bars and, you know, as happens in the start. And so all of a sudden I'm in the 30s going like, no, this is like, that's cyclocross. I'm not like, you know, feeling the injustice or anything, but it was already starting like not where I want to be.
Right.
Whereas in years past, I would freak out and try to get as far forward as I can, as fast as I can. And having the knowledge from the non-championship race of if you go as hard as you can for a lap, that will be your race.
Right.
Just kind of settle in and move up where you can and like just kind of do that. And so it was really, really awesome to see the running payoff that I've been doing. I was able to be a couple seconds behind the group in front of me and either run into or through that group on the run up if we were all running. And so it took me like half the race to really get where I felt like I needed to be. And I really decided to not play tactics and like sit in groups, 'cause the course was hard enough that you just need to pedal your bike.
Right.
And so I wouldn't, like, if I got to a group and they started, like, I wouldn't have any hesitation to go to the front and just pedal. Like, cause it's nationals. I had a number in mind. I wanted to be in the top 10.
Right.
And me sitting in this group is not going to get me there, especially with how much it, like, split up.
Mm-hmm.
And so halfway through, I was feeling okay about where I was, and there were some people blowing up that I didn't expect to blow up, or people crashing in places that I didn't quite expect. And so, I didn't get the best start, but I also heard like three explosions behind me in the first lap. So I was like, okay, I barely, you know, while the start didn't go right where I wanted, everything else after that happened in the first two laps went right. And then it was like, there's video of Cody Kaiser and Zach McDonald doing that, going into this drop section, the mountain bike section, doing this like rad nose wheelie thing before mm-hmm. dropping in. And so I was right around Zach at that point and knew that he would go much faster down that. And good race tactics are to get in front of the guy going faster so that you can ride it at your own speed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like really excited because everyone was cheering Zach because he's doing really rad stuff.
Right.
And then I came in under him and I was like, oh my gosh, like I just came in under Zach McDonald. This is the coolest thing. And then I crashed coming around. Like you drop and then you do the quick left, right. And then it kind of like chundery roots.
Yeah.
Before the second.
Yeah. There's like that huge root on the left side. The drop off.
Yeah. And, I totally just ate shit in front of everyone. It's like, no.
Do you know where you were at that point?
I was about 7 seconds off ninth.
Okay.
Like, yeah, I was about 7 seconds off them. So in 10 through 15 ish.
Yeah.
Still like moving forward, no matter what, just move forward.
Right.
And so I crashed. I lost the two spots that I had just gained.
What's going through your head when you're lying on the ground?
Get up, get on your bike. Like, obviously, don't get run over. But it was too fast to really think. Like,
mm-hmm.
get on the bike, start going downhill again, and then...
So you're not only losing time, but you're losing momentum since it was on the downhill.
Well, yeah, and, you know, you still have a pretty technical section to get down
sure.
to even assess what's going on.
Right, so you can't, like, just freak out and go as hard as you can.
Because, you know, you also just crashed.
Yeah.
So your confidence is a little bit shot. So I lost, like, two or three spots there. And then I couldn't... The bike didn't feel bad. But, again, it's like I didn't want to figure out that I bent my derailleur hanger when I shifted into my, you know, biggest or smallest gear.
Right.
And like sent the derailleur into the spokes. And so then I pitted and that took, you know, then I lost another four spots.
Oh, just on pitting.
Or like two or three. Yeah. It was like three spots.
Yeah. Cause that was a pretty sloggy area. So I'm assuming like getting back off and on the bike probably
mm-hmm.
was much slower.
Yeah. And I mean, pitting's never fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's never an advantage really to pit.
Right.
At least with those conditions, like Powers didn't pit once. Like people weren't pitting because of the conditions.
Yeah. And that's something to be said. Cause we talked earlier about how wet and mm-hmm. soggy it mm-hmm. was up by the wind really picked up early, you know, later in the morning. And by the time you all raced in the afternoon, bikes were coming in with no mud on them.
Yeah. Or the mud that was on them was negligible.
Right.
Like there was issues with pedals. Like I had some issues with my pedal.
Yeah, because of that, the pro only run up.
Yeah.
Which was extremely muddy, but you know, you're carrying your bike. I think a lot of people, that's where their pedals started
mm-hmm.
not working because their cleats were so clogged up.
Yeah. So when I had to take the new bike, I was like, oh, cool. My pedals work again. At least, you know, for a few laps.
Right.
But it was great because like, instead of having just one person in the pit, like I was able to do the full pro, like send my bike to one person and then the second person hands it off. And that was really cool. And then from there it was just, I was caught to like, I passed the guys that I was with and then Justin Lindeen and Jack Kisseberth were like both riding really strong.
You and Jack spending a lot of time together.
I know. Yeah. And it's funny because we have our skill sets are completely different.
Mm-hmm.
He can go downhill and technical stuff. Like, it's incredible to watch. It's just awe-inspiring. Like, and I can all, but then I can pedal pretty hard.
Right.
And that's kind of a difference. But because, you know, because I didn't have the best start and I crashed. So I was riding for 10th place,
mm-hmm.
or better. And so when it came down to the last lap, Jack came to the front, and he's always been really good at having a fast last lap. And so my efforts to get to the top 10 had me lose Jack. And that was really like, man. But kudos to him, because he rode a great last lap. And then the rest of the race was just like, hold off Lindeen, because he finishes strong. So when it came, you know, came to the end, it was just get through the last lap. Don't make any mistakes. And I knew if that, as long as I was within a few seconds coming off the downhill of whoever I was with, like, I could pedal pretty hard at the end, as roadies do. And so I just made sure to be in the front on the second half of the course with the switchback ups. And
right.
Like, I was only going to ride, like, once Jack was gone and I knew he was gone, like, I blew up hard on the last time up Heckle Hill. And so, like, from that point on, it was like, okay, my race is for 12th, and so I'm going to race for 12th instead of, like, racing myself out of 12th.
Right.
And so I just rode as fast as I needed to keep Justin behind me. And so, you know, I was able to do that and get 12th. And I saw you right at the end, and I still didn't know how I felt about it.
Yeah.
And
yeah. No, you definitely were like seemed in your own space.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it. And, like, you know, I wasn't like going to throw my helmet or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because I honestly felt like I raced the best race given each input. I felt like I responded
right
in the best way.
You did a reasonable assessment beforehand of where you could finish, and it
yeah.
truly was, you know, in that probably that lower half of that top 10.
Yeah, and you know, having time to think about it, I would have loved to, and again, it's easy to sit here in your basement a week after and talk about this, but I would have loved to have had the start to be to be able to be in the top 5 for the mm-hmm. first lap. And
right.
just see what, like, blow up or not, just see what could have happened.
Sure.
Because I felt like, you know, after the first, you know, I felt like I rode the course very well. And I would have loved to have seen what that would have looked like with the guys that I haven't raced against much.
Right.
Like, Jamie Driscoll, Jonathan Page, Ekman, like the guys who were, like, right in front of me. Well, not right. Like, they were still like a minute ahead, but like,
yeah. Well, I mean, right. If the start goes better, then at least you're in that conversation
exactly.
for that first lap or so, and then see where it takes you
exactly.
from there.
So when you set a goal, that means you cannot reach the goal, and then you have to deal with like not reaching the goal. So when everyone asked after the race, like, really good job. Thanks. How do you feel? I'll feel good in 2 weeks.
Right.
I actually started to feel better a lot faster than I was expecting, which is good. And especially when I really thought about, like, you know, I was in, like, the deep 20s, and I made it to 12th. Like, that's cool.
Yeah. And again, it's similar to that North Carolina
exactly.
mindset that you finished 12th.
Yes.
In the national championship
yes.
against the best, and
yes,
had some issues in
yes,
your race.
Exactly. And so what I'm so stoked about is learning how to continue to reduce the chances of those things happening for next year.
Right.
To give myself the opportunity to see what could happen. Like
right.
putting yourself with the good support and having the good support lead to better results, and the better results to leading to better start positions, leading to more experience at the front of races, leading to, you know, it just kind of builds on itself.
Yeah.
Like to all the guys who are still chasing the UCI points, like you just flog yourself to get that one UCI point. And then all of a sudden you're like, you're on the third row, or you're right. in the fourth row.
Right.
And because of that, you're that much closer to the top 10. So you can get enough, you get more points, and then you get more points, and then you get better starting positions.
And now coming into next year, you don't have to
no
go through that fight anymore.
Holy crap. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah. So beginning of the season, you're already set. You don't have to work through that first obstacle.
Yeah. I think like worst case scenario, I mean, depending on the guys, how much of the guys do the Europe stuff and where that puts their points. But like worst case, I don't think I'm going to be further back than the second row.
Right.
And that's awesome. That's a great way to start the season.
Yeah, absolutely. So you ended up 20th in the Pro CX.
Yeah, tied with Justin, I think.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And looking at it, you know, you're one slot behind Jeremy Duren, who mm-hmm. is on the world's team.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Clark on mm-hmm. the world's team.
Yeah.
You're not in that conversation. You don't have the points. You're sort of yeah. a little lower down. However, you have to look at that. And I know the races that I saw you in and looking at results, with especially those two guys, you're riding around them
yeah.
and in groups with them all yeah. year round. So that has to give you some confidence going forward that they are being looked at you
right.
know, and getting these opportunities to be on the world's team.
Yeah.
And you're really in that same conversation.
Yeah.
As far as ability and as far as mm-hmm. results over the year. I mean, you missed out on the C1s. You missed out on a lot of opportunities to get points.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Because like when we talked before, you know, I said my long-term goal is to make the world's team by 2018.
Right.
And that's cool to do because it sets your sights high. But it also was kind of a detriment to me because I pushed the possibility of it happening to 3 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And so because I did that, I didn't have the confidence in myself to even, like, I didn't even let myself think about the possibility this year because, oh, well, you know, I'm just starting out, new team, I hadn't even podiumed, like, a UCI race, like, all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I didn't even give myself the opportunity to like look at what it would take to get on the world's team. Like I hadn't even let myself have the confidence to do that. And so like, you know, those guys have an incredible opportunity and I'm so stoked for them, but I'm also kind of angry at myself to not have even given myself the opportunity to be in that conversation. But now, you know, now it's something that I know is very tangible. Like it was an intangible before, even though I said it, like I wanted it, and it, if everything goes right, it's possible. But like now I know, and I want it.
Yeah.
I want it bad. Yeah.
So looking forward to next year,
mm-hmm.
how are you going to strategically, what's knowing these things, UCI points and C1s
yeah.
and that type of thing that are going to help you get to where you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to travel more? Is that the plan? I mean, how are you treating next season, or have you even gotten to the point of thinking about that yet?
A lot of next season is going to be determined by the support, because that, you know, I wish it wasn't the case, but like, you know, you need money to do stuff. And it's hard to ask for it. So it's going to be a thought now. Like, so now that I'm like, oh, I want to go to Worlds and I know it's possible. Like you have to do the things that people do who want to show that they want to go to Worlds. So obviously you want to like race World Cups. Whew, okay. Well, that's a lot of budget to go for one race.
Right. Like, but assuming that the U.S. gets a double allotment again at Cross Vegas, and if Jingle Cross becomes a World Cup, then that one as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so, like,
that's 16, 17 guys.
Yeah. I think I'm in that conversation.
Right.
And, like, still has not been lost on me that I, like, that I can say those words is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, from a budget standpoint, it's like, yes, if I want to be in the world's conversation, I need to do that. But also from developing the team as a brand and wanting to have the impact on the sport that I want and to make sure that I can get to the other races to get the points. And if Pro CX is something that I continue to want to pursue, like, cost benefit, you know, like, what's it going to do for my career? And I don't know the answer to this, but it's something that I'm thinking about. Like, what's it going to do for my career to make the world's team, just to say that I made the world's team? Or is it really going to be important for me to set my sights on Europe? When from a sustainability in the sport standpoint, that could not work out. Like, I could go to, you know, spend a lot of resources going to Europe, and then, you know, and that be that track, and that would be incredible. Or I could use those resources to really establish myself long-term, hopefully, in the U.S. scene. And, you know, it costs money to, like, you know, it's at least a $3,000 trip every time you cross the pond. And, man, I could do a lot. I could do a lot with $3,000 in the U.S.
Have you reached out to Jeff Proctor at all, at least to sort of
talk to
him about the possibilities, especially in the future?
I've introduced myself via the internet.
Good.
And, you know, that's just the stuff that now that, you know, to all the guys who want to try to do this, like, don't wait for external cues to act like you want to see yourself acting, right? So, like, don't wait for external validation to go ahead and email the people that you know are the gatekeepers. Like, don't wait for them to email you.
Right. You know, I think another person who's contributed to in the crosshair has also been on the podcast. Amanda Nauman is a really good example of that, where she's in Europe right now racing.
Go, Amanda.
Yeah, World Cups, which is just awesome. But she's not waiting, as you said, for that validation. She's going out and finding the right people to talk to and following up and making things happen.
Right. And so, like, her, you know, her podcast was so cool to listen to, because it's like, oh, I'm doing the same thing. It's like, yeah. And exactly. Like, if I would have waited around, I wouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I made that switch mentally, it's just one of those, another, like, really big points in my career where it's like, okay, I'm going to act like the professional that I want to be. And I'm the one who's going to determine if I'm a professional. And so even when you wrote, on the intro to the last blog or the last podcast on your page, you said professional athlete, or professional cyclist. And I'm like, my initial reaction was like, oh, I'm not a professional. And changing that mental mindset to go, no, shoot, like, I am a professional. Like, look at my life, look at what I'm trying to do. And as soon as I made that switch, it was like, oh, and then everything else is starting to fall into place for that to be the reality. So determine your own reality, and then everything else will, like, you will work towards that. And that's just been something that's been so instrumental in the past 2 months to give me the confidence to, you know, yeah, I'm a professional cyclist, and a professional cyclist that I want to be rides in the top 10 at UCI races. And so I do, and I have the confidence to, like, not freak out when I'm rubbing elbows with Jamie Driscoll, who's, you know, I watched him on Beyond the Barriers. Like, you know, like, that switch from being someone just trying to claw into the ranks And having the confidence to have them be my peers now, like, I'm still like, it's still a thing that's weird for me to say, but like, that's the reality. And I'm not going to step into that reality until I believe that, yeah, these are my peers and I, you know, I am here to race and beat them and I can. And that's still weird to say.
Yeah, no, I completely understand. I'm sort of going through a little bit of that in my own my own world with the opportunities that I'm getting where it's, you know, so I completely understand it. But I think that's probably a good place to, to finish up. You have a sort of uphill battle, as all professional athletes do, especially ones supporting themselves with getting sponsorship. Where can people find you? Where can they follow you?
Yeah, so the website's going to, Beyond CX is going to say Beyond CX. So www.beyondcx.rocks. That is the website. That's where the blogs are. That's where things are going to.
And there's a contact information as well.
Yeah. You can also at Beyond CX Rocks on Instagram. You can shoot me a message through there. You can also get to me through my own personal Instagram at BenJamFred. And, you know, as things kind of start coming together, there will be more announcements, but definitely use the contact page on the website to, you know, just say, hey, like you can sponsor me just by sending me a note, because
absolutely,
like that stuff, you know this, but like just those little things, it's like, okay, good. Like,
no, it's huge. It's cool. It's great when people reach out. It also is, it's a type of thing that, you know, you're a personable person and that goes a long way, and you can show those things, you know, that's what sponsors want as well. You're a good personality to follow. And it's been awesome talking to you again for this follow-up. And
thank you so much for the opportunity and all the people out there. Like, thank you. I'm really excited, and I hope you guys are, about seeing what next year is going to hold, because it's going to be big.
All right. Well, absolutely. Well, you know, when that happens, maybe around Charm City or DCCX, we'll go for round three.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Sounds good. Bill.
All right. All right, and there you have it. Episode 20 in the books with Ben Frederick. 20 episodes. Can't believe it's already been that many. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for the support and all of the great feedback. If you want to send me a note, send it to feedback@cxhairs.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @cxhairs, Instagram @cxhairs, Facebook, you name it. I'm around, and I'll see you all next week on Crosshairs Radio.